welcome back to Beyond the Couch with Bridges Mental Health. I am Christy, and today I'm here with Yukong Chen, who is a clinical psychologist and also a member of our Bridges clinician community. Welcome, Yukong. Thanks for being on.
Yes, thank you, Christy. And hello, everyone. My name is Yukong Chen. I am a licensed psychologist in New York City. I'm very happy to have this opportunity to join this conversation. And I'm from Taiwan. I came to New York many years ago. And I've been in the mental health field since then. I now have a private practice and also another full-time job at a community mental health clinic, providing training, supervision for the interns.
Big part of why we wanted to hear a bit more about your story, Yukong, is also in there being not a lot of men or especially Asian men in the mental health / psychology field. And we wanted to get a little bit more representation for the men since it's been largely women on this podcast, but also to hear about what it's like for you as you've come into this profession, the work that you're doing currently, and also what you can see not only going through grad school, but working with a lot of men and what kind of themes you might see among Asian men as well.
No matter where you go, the training program, internship, externship site, or your current job, there's usually more females than male. I mean, male-identified, female-identified clinicians. I actually found this article on the APA website. It was back in 2018, but I believe the situation probably is still quite similar. So it talks about the female-male ratio in the graduate program. So for instance, almost 80% of the students are female-identified versus about 20% are male-identified. So for my personal experience, yeah, I just remember the early years. I came here for graduate program. I just remember the beginning years. I always feels like, I kind of feel like no matter where I go, I'm usually the only one international, Asian, and the male individual, like in class, in the classroom, at the externship site, and then also at my first job. My first job is a case manager after I graduate. So I'm also the only male case manager staff member in that team. So it was a very unique experience. Yes.
Wow, on every level, all these different roles within mental health.
Yes. And also on top of that, right? I mean, I will have connection with other international students. There's definitely a male international students, right? But you also feel quite lonely in a way that usually, like, you will encounter international male identified students who are in like computer science, engineering, right? And what are you majoring? Like mental health, right? So even within that group, right, sometimes feel quite isolated in a way. Yeah.
I remember from my grad school experience that there were very few male identified folks, and especially much fewer non-binary or trans folks. But I also am curious about what that was like on your end then, being in class.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot of pressure, but I had to say, right, when I look back, a lot of pressure is actually from myself. I'm giving myself a lot of pressure, right? It's not necessarily about like somebody or really say or did anything to me, right? But what I mean is like the pressure is probably comes more from within. Is there's always this awareness that, like I mentioned, I'm so aware that I'm the only Asian male student in this space. I kind of feel like everything I said or even just every mistake I make, it will kind of represent the whole group, right? That's a lot of responsibility to take on, right? But like I say, right, this is kind of the pressure I give myself.
I'm curious if that pressure felt different than pressure that you might have felt before, that sense of having to represent a whole group.
Looking back, I feel like I had to learn almost like understand who I am as a male again in that context, which is quite interesting because I was obviously early adult, right? But definitely around that time, I kind of feel like I need to really explore that again, like who I really am, you know, as an Asian male, right? In this city, in this society.
Can you tell us more about what you learned about yourself in this new way?
Well, it certainly can feel a little bit disoriented. And I have to say a lot of experience is quite humbling. Also for the fact that in this field, there's a lot of, you know, we want to be, you know, authentic, you know, get in touch with our feelings, emotions. So this is like stereotypes, right? Because we are talking about gender. So definitely we will talk about stereotypes, right? In no way I'm saying that every male identified individual feel the same way, right? I'm only talking about from my personal experience, right? I think part of the experience, actually still now, right? You know, but focusing on the first few years, right? It's really just opening my eyes about how to be vulnerable and really get in touch with my feelings, emotion, which I think is also part of the privilege of being the male, right? I don't need to think too much about how I really feel, how I really, you know, make other people feel, right? But in this profession, the first few years I mentioned earlier, right, I tried to learn the culture, then the language. It almost feels like I need to learn how to be an Asian male again in this environment. It's a very, very rewarding and humbling learning experience. Yes.
I'm curious if you had any impressions about vulnerability and emotions prior to coming into this work.
Actually, right before I came to New York City, I was serving in the military in Taiwan. At that time, it was mandatory. And because of my psychology background, I was still doing psychological counseling related work, which is an all male environment, which is quite interesting. So actually, that's also quite an eye-opening experience for me. I get to learn, you know, even just among male identified individual, there's of course different way, like how people express their vulnerability, right? I feel like those 2 years of experience, I did learn a lot, right? But like I say, it is an all male environment. And then I came to New York City immediately, like different culture and different gender, right? So multicultural background. So again, I suddenly feel like, okay, I still have so much to learn. Also, I feel more importantly is to learn about how I feel, right? Because like, for example, when I mentioned about like stereotypes, somehow I don't have this like very immediate emotional reaction. What that is about, you know, I found that a very important learning lesson to me as well.
Yeah. Growing up and living in Taiwan, I'm curious how you view the cultural aspect as well as gender impacting that emotional learning.
Well, I mentioned about like, you know, there's certainly some male privilege, right? So actually, just a few days ago, I had this conversation with a very good friend. She's a female identified individual. And we had this very interesting conversation about, she talked about a family member is giving birth and somehow being a female member in a family, she expected to sacrifice some of her personal time to also try, you know, take care of that newborn baby. And then we were talking about like, I bet that, you know, you meaning me, right? You know, a male, if you are in my family, you will not be expected to like take up some, you know, of your work hours to take care of the baby. You will still be just doing your own thing. You won't have that expectation. That's true, right? And also just using the example, right? So taking care of an infant, a baby, a lot of time, a lot of energy, definitely a very emotional labor work, right? So that's what I mean. I feel like being a male, there's certain this privilege that there's certain types of emotional labor work, even like privately in family or even just like in professional work, like somehow there's this stereotype of privilege that being a man, you don't have to do that, right? The female would take care of that, right?
That also comes up a lot in terms of emotional labor in heterosexual relationships, of like who bears the brunt, or women kind of initiating a lot of difficult conversations or emotional exploration, also in the work too. as even in the imbalance of how many women there are in the field doing a lot of that emotional labor. And I'm curious then how it felt for you to move through grad school, through your doctorate program, and then kind of landing in the more professional space.
So actually, right from the beginning, like when I say, okay, I want to choose psychology as a major, but there's a lot of disbelief and even like anger from my parents, like particularly my father, right? He was quite unhappy about my decision. But I was very lucky. I feel, you know, I mean, like my parents, even until now, they still have their opinions, but eventually they respect my choice, my decision. They will still try their best to support me. But just, you know, share a little bit of my experience, right? So actually, a lot of their worries are quite valid, right? Even I just admit, right? Actually, at that time, I was not thinking too much about how do I make money after this psychology degree, right? So there's definitely a lot of concerns from my parents, right? About like, how are you gonna support yourself, right? That's part of the reality that this is indeed a profession that we are not gonna make like millions of dollars, at least not immediately, right? It's quite unusual, right? From compared to like I mentioned about like computer science, engineering, right? It's quite different.
Yeah. And for the most part, everyone's severely underpaid.
Yeah. I always remember, right, no matter where I go, or even now I'm a training director, one of the things I always remind the new interns that remind yourself this is like a very overworked, underpaid profession, you know, so the bitter truth, right? And a lot of Asian parents, they have this expectation, right? Probably not just for male, but also for females, right? If you like continue your education, then try to become a doctor, try to become a lawyer, right? Why not psychologist, right? So for me, part of my journey, like continue, you know, the master's program and then doctoral program, for me, this journey somehow works out in a way like make my father proud in a way that, hey, I'm a doctor too, but you know, I'm not a medical doctor, but I'm still a doctor, right?
Yeah, I'm sure he'll take it.
Yes, I hope so. Yeah, very often they will still ask me like, you know, do you have enough money? Like, do you save enough money in your banking account? But maybe that's part of that, you know, like Asian parents, they are always worry for their child, right? That's maybe part of that. But also I feel just this underlying anxiety about like, is it really making any money? Like, is it really like has a good job, you know?
Well, so then Yukong, I'm curious too about what it was like for you to continue in this career path, even with your parents' concerns. What kept you in this field?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I mentioned earlier, right? I'm very lucky. Like after all, eventually at the end of the day, my parents still find a way to support me, even though we might disagree, right, with my decision, you know, the direction of my professional life. Secondly, I really enjoy this job. I'm just curious about human minds, human nature in general. I feel this is just one of the fields that we can really use our knowledge and then really apply that to do something good to the society. And then at the same time, make a living, right? Mm. Even though I talk about like we are not making too much, but this is not like that terrible job, right? We all can still make a, you know, some good money to sustain our life, right? So. Well, another part, for example, all these decisions, like, kind of like, yeah, no matter what my parents say, I will still just do it no matter what.
I can also see that interpreted in the way of more individualist values or the decisions that you're making that aren't necessarily to make your parents happy.
Yes.
Does that feel relevant to what you experience and also see in your work too, around like that kind of balance between individual and collectivist values?
Yeah, yes. Come to think of it, right? I feel that this is another quite tricky, or I would say maybe I quite enjoy that, a very interesting balance. But also like the fact that a male identified individual choosing this career is actually not that common. It's actually breaking stereotypes in a way, going back to, I say that I feel I had to relearn myself, like being a male in this society. It's related to that. I feel like sometimes I feel like I'm like the most traditional stereotype man in the room, but at the same time, what I'm doing is also really, really not traditional at all, right? Because of the career path I'm choosing, right?
How else do you see that sort of stereotype, maybe even around how Asian men can relate to emotions, but also therapy, and whether they even find interest or feel safe enough to seek out therapy?
That's a good question. One of the typical presentation that I have witnessed, observed, is maybe Asian male identified individual in their 20, 30, young adulthood, and this conflict, right? This expectation from the family, right? Family obligation or traditional values, right? They feel like they had to follow. Maybe it's also coming in the context of the parents are immigrants, right? They are more like traditional in the way that, you know, the Asian culture versus, and then this individual, the male patient clients growing up here, like more and more Americanized, right? So there's this conflict start to develop, right? There's this pressure of, you know, fulfilling the responsibility, expectation from the parents versus what I really want, right? Living in this city, right? There's also this probably society's pressure and expectation that you to make it on your own, right? So a typical presentation we have seen both in the community clinic I've been working at and also my private practice is male individuals, young adults in a life transitional phase. For example, they're gonna graduate or they want to change career and they suddenly feel a lot of sense of lost, right? Suddenly do not know how to make decision or depression, anxiety symptoms happening, but it's all surrounded to this, like the male, being an Asian male in this society and also acculturation between the different generation, different immigration experience.
Yeah, I noticed that a life change or maybe a career crisis is a common reason for people to come into therapy, but that's a helpful lead into therapy, and then you come and encounter all of the conflicts that might be around that decision. Like, who am I really? What do I actually want in my life? What are the expectations? It can feel like, well, let me just go to therapy and figure out what to do next and what is the best right thing to do. And if you're really curious and wanting to explore those deeper pieces of like, where are all the forces in your life and what do you want to choose to do?
From my personal experience, particularly being a male, right? Like how we grew up, how we navigate life, most of the time we don't have to think too much about feelings or even like how we feel, right? So it's only probably in this like moment, like life transition or even just crisis moment.
Or a more emotional partner is making you go.
Yeah. And you realize that you never really stop and really think about how you feel, how you think. And so that's probably also what has happened to some of the patient we are working with, this sudden realization that they had to take a moment to stop and really think about what has been happening, like how they operate in this world, right?
In thinking about your working with clients, I am curious about men wanting to work with you. And I am also curious about what you notice in clients' reactions to you if they're not men or even women identified clients, of what you might notice in their reactions to you as a male therapist.
First, I want to share some experience as a supervisor, right? At my community clinic. Every year we have interns. We usually will get more female interns than male interns. I feel I'm still learning that in the sense of, I often forget, you know, probably this is my fault that when I supervise, let's say that, a young Asian female intern, this is their first ever internship. I do sometimes forget that to them, I'm not only the supervisor, right? I also represent this Asian male probably authority figure, right? So, and so just kind of like think about, consider their how they perceive me. And in terms of the patients I work with, there's tend to be more request indicate that, you know, they want to work with female clinician, right? But there's usually less request that's specifically about like male therapist, right? And in my private practice, I have both female and male patients, and the female patients I have, we connect with each other quite interestingly. It's more because my other identity, my other growing up background that my female patient can feel there's a connection to. And there's also the male patients who come in for treatment. For instance, like in our community clinic, sometimes we get referral of parents, single mother, right, raising boy, right? They want the boy to get treatment because of some behavioral issues, a case presentation like that. Maybe this is an individual who can benefit from, you know, some male figures in their life, right? So that kind of somehow translate into the therapeutic relationship.
Yeah, I'm thinking back to my past experiences in internships and in jobs where it was mostly women. And there would often be cases where we wish there were some more male therapists or clinicians that could offer a different sort of energy and a different relationship to certain clients. I know a lot of us looking for a therapist now are looking for someone who matches a lot of identity pieces, whether it's gender or racial, cultural. But there's also a lot of value in working with someone who's of a different gender and kind of exploring what stuff we might have around that too, as clients. And it sounds like as a therapist, you also notice what kind of reactions can come up.
Yes, yes. Hopefully, right, we can find a way to encourage more male identified individuals to come into this field, right? I feel that this is such a disservice, like, you know, to everyone in terms of training and clinical experience. Some piece of that diversity experience is lost in that training experience, right?
If there are people who are listening who are doubtful or who might be concerned about entering the field as a minority in terms of gender, or might just be an Asian identified man who's apprehensive about seeking therapy or feels like feelings aren't really that important, what might you say to those folks?
I would say that it could be very fun, even though the thought of that can be quite scary. And I would just be totally honest.
Yeah.
You know, even though I talk a lot about like feelings, emotion, but like if I'm in like a class or in a session that is all like 60 minutes nonstop feelings, emotion, I'll be, oh my God, I cannot handle that. That's too much, you know, but that's what I said earlier, right? Also, you know, like through this, you know, all this professional training experience, I get to learn and like critical thinking. I will ask myself, like, how come I will have this kind of reaction, right? Just be curious about like why I will have this kind of thoughts, you know, feelings or even behavior, right?
Totally. I feel like everyone wins when
yes.
men know more about themselves and their feelings.
Exactly. I feel like maybe male in general, like we all can think of maybe somebody we know or like family member or just public figure, like male figure who are so repressed in their life, right? You kind of want to shake them, right? Just be vulnerable, just be open, right? Yeah.
Well, you're a testament to it, Yukong, that you survived being vulnerable.
Yes, I
enough.
Survived. Yes, yes. That's true. Yes, I survived. Yeah. So you can do that too, you know, if I could survive, right?
If Yukong can do it, you can.
Yes, yes.
What's bringing you joy recently?
My answer is making my parents laugh. So, okay, I'll just say something quite shocking to them. It's quite entertaining because they laugh. So I just assume that they were happy, you know, so everybody's happy.
Can you tell us about an APISA or an Asian identified person or resource you'd like to spotlight?
Asian American Federation. So they do a lot of advocacy and social justice issue, and regularly they provide workshop on mental health and also even like self-defense.
Yeah, I believe Asian American Federation is still offering free self-defense classes as well for folks in New York City, at least. So we'll definitely include that for people who want to learn more. Well, it's been so fun. Speaking of joy and laughter, to speak with you, Yukong, and I really appreciate your sharing about your story in this work so far. And hopefully we'll have another episode with you soon. And if there are any questions at all for us at Bridges, you all can email us or find us on Instagram at Bridges Mental Health. Thank you so much, Yukong, for being on.
Thank you. I enjoy it a lot too. Thank you.